Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, speaking to you live from our studio here in Washington, D.C. Again, my name is Bilal Masadiq Bynum, and along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Assalamu alaikum and greetings to the audience and you, Brother Bilal. How are you today?
Same to you, Brother Aziz. Same to you. Good to hear from you. And
yes, sir.
We sit here to go through another presentation. And, of course, we're going to have open mic, but for those who come on this evening, we're going to be giving a lot of very, very good information on preparation for survival. And then we're having what we call our doctor, but as far as we're concerned, Sister Aisha, who I can't begin to tell you her qualifications. There are so many.
Absolutely.
But she looks forward to sharing, like the rest of us, our professional talents that we have been blessed to have throughout our careers. And we want to share, especially with our younger generation, and especially when it comes to business and when it comes to politics, and now we have to include disasters because it looks like we need to prepare to have many of them. I do believe that we are on the verge of many disasters coming our way. But again, we will have an expert to talk about that particular subject for those who come on this evening. We're going to, for those who wish to call and participate in the show, our call-in number is 657-383-1372. That is 657-383-1372. And you can participate here in the studio with us. So, Brother Aziz, as always going to be my interest to talk about business whenever I'm generalizing, because I know that business is the key to true independence in this country.
Yes, yes.
The ownership of property. Business, the ownership of properties, and we have to control our political communities, which means we need to get our own representatives in many of these offices, whether they're federal, local, state, small, or large. If it's where you have to vote to be nominated to authority, then we need our representatives. If not in there, being a threat to those who are, and then making certain they do what they have to do in order to stay in office. So politically, we have our work. So with that said, Brother Aziz, I'm going to let you open up with your generalizations and say whatever you have on your mind.
Well, thank you, Brother Bilal. One of the things have on my mind is this. There's a state of the union right now in terms of business. Right now, you know, with these politicians playing games, nobody's looking out for the people. They're looking out for the party's best interest. And we know that there's a possibility that the government will be going into default here within a week or so. And that's going to cause a lot of ripple effects throughout the world, not just the nation we're in. People who get their Social Security, military paycheck, different things like that where people are depending on a system, the banking system, to pay them, they're going to have problems, and as well as trade and commerce. It's going to put a backlash on that because nobody's going to be able to get paid either way you look at it. The consumers of the countries being paid by the U.S. The U.S. owes money to a lot of other countries. So, and that's going to affect a lot of the businesses here at home. That's what I'm saying. If this goes down, because the businesses right now at home are hurting in many instances. And the reason why is because so much of the employment, so much of the business, the production, is out of this country. It's not in this country. And I don't know if it's deliberate, whatever. But by taking the production out of America, you know, that zeroed us in for a downfall because the population is steady growing. And the only thing the population is really doing is consuming. Wherein many years ago, 50 years ago, we were able to have all of the products that were produced in America was desired all around the world, not in just one location. You saw the heads of state in many of countries, Russia, all over Europe, driving Cadillacs or either the Chrysler, not the New Yorker, but the big Chrysler limousine. I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, our production level was extremely well. And I do believe, this is just my opinion, that because America was producing such good quality and they were paying good wages, there was a fear among the wealthy people that because of this, and people were getting really highly educated in being able not only to be part of a production assembly, a factory, a plant, or whatever, but they were coming to the understanding that, hey, we can do this too. We can go out and set us up a business doing the same thing they do and maybe compete, you know, we save our monies up and things like that. And, you know, and people started doing that, and I do believe the wealthy said, hey, we're going to take this business out of America and take it somewhere else. And when they did that, they hurt many of families, many of homes, and the economy was turned upside down, the housing market, everything. So what we know is that when the debts are not paid, when we are dependent on foreign countries to do everything for us, we're going to continue to fall, and these things are going to keep happening. But if we get back to producing, we have the resources. There's very few countries you can go to and find a junkyard that's piled up with a bunch of metal, steel, and iron and all that. No way. In countries where they don't have resources like we do, you don't see junkyards in Japan or China or Korea. When a car or something is no longer in use, they disassemble that car and recycle everything. Recycle everything. Nothing goes back into the earth. It's just business. And in that recycling process, that is a business for a number of the people in the society. So there are a number of things that we could do to go back into producing again. We produce very good cotton. We produce enough cotton to compete against any country in the world. Pakistan, Egypt. And we produce very little cotton. Now we produce cotton was very little in my home state, Alabama. Matter of fact, right where I come from, a place called Fairhope, Alabama, they produce cotton right there, right to the day. Some of the farmers, even though there's mainstream production everywhere around, there are still different fields along the road that are cotton. They're filled with cotton. Cotton farmers, these guys are still growing in many locations. So all I'm saying is with that cotton, we produce many, many garments and clothing here as opposed to getting cotton in the garments from other places. We don't have any mills around that will develop this cotton wearing the cloth where we could use it. So we need to produce in this country. And black folks, with all of this said, knowing that there's opportunities in producing everywhere, but if we come together in whatever business you want to come together with someone and start that business in our community, it's going to put some life back into our community. Production, you know, without any production, there's no life. It's like one person is not a family. Two people is the beginning of the family. But when you got three or more, now we're talking about families. And that's in families is what, you know, contribute to communities. And those families need to see, these children growing up need to see their own people in business, like a lot of the other people we see in America. They see their own people, the Italians, the Greeks, the Jewish people, even the people from the, in Africa. When they go into business, they have their own people going in there, so that when you see them in this business, you know what's happening. You know, these are the things that we need to take in mind. And the only way we can do that is by the leaders in our community telling the need and desire for us to do for self. Do for self. A quote by an African-American named Elijah Muhammad. He come out with that quote. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I should say, not Elijah Muhammad. And that do for self is what so many other people do. So many other communities do, but that saying was targeted at specifically at the African-American community here, the so-called Negro, to do for self, and you'll see how advanced you could be, not only in America, but in the world, because of the money that our sponsor, Brother Bilal, our host, Brother Bilal, has brought up many a times. What one can't do, many can. And we see this in all, we see this same quote applied by many people that in our communities, not everybody else's communities, not communities. You see the beautician shops in our communities. They're either run, the beauty supply shops. They're run by people from China, Korea, or India, or Pakistan. Not no African-American. Somebody selling you some, you're an African-American, and somebody selling you some cosmetics, hair ingredients for you, and you buying it from them. You think you could go sell them something like that? No. Not even. We see many places like this that businesses that are solely for us, but somebody else is serving us our own stuff we need. So over and over again, we're going to keep saying this as long as we're on there, that do for self, network, communicate, and if you have a business in that, come on our show, let us know who you are. If you want to start a business, come on our show and let us know who you are, because that's what the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Business Association is about. We're about marketing and networking and trying to help establish African-American businesses and African-American communities to serve all that comes into our community, but establishing businesses in our community as well as our youth. Brother Belong, we had talked about something earlier, this fellow that might mention too, about the need for us educating our own, having school systems educate our own, not just, not for business, but our children.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very, you know, but, that's a very important topic there. Matter of fact, we're going to be bringing back on Ms. Juan.
Yeah.
Bring her, because that is true. We need to consider, we have to educate our own kids. I see no other way out for African Americans to get a true education if they can't put together their own curriculum. But you was mentioning some things that are more unprecedented, Brother Aziz, and that is our budget.
Yes, sir.
Budget and the damages that if a default was to happen, the damages that it would those damages would be catastrophic damages, and it would be catastrophic in many parts of the world. You may even have world wars, because think if our government is not functional at all, think what other countries like Russia and China is going to do. And and many others, because we're saying it's dog eat dog. That's what our world is turning into. I ain't gonna pay you, and you ain't gonna pay me, and you owe me, and I'm gonna come take my, you know, dog eat dog.
Yeah.
But my thing is that, what is the African American's plan if we should go a couple of weeks from now into an all-out depression, especially in those who do not have any monies, will immediately go into, where is that next meal going to come from within a 24-hour period? Because
absolutely,
you're talking about having cash, being able to have cash, and inflation for those who even have cash is going to be so high until your cash is going to run out. So what is our plans if such a disaster was to occur? And let's say, and that's a serious possibility, in just a few days,
right,
we'll be going into a situation our country has never been in before. You have defaulted on paying your debt. And I'm just saying, I guess for someone who's in default, and we all are in default sometimes on paying our debt, but the feeling of knowing I owe somebody something and I can't pay them, and therefore if I can't get no one to give me the services that I need in order to function, in order to get money to pay them, you got a pretty bad situation. You got a chaotic situation. You have a disaster.
Yep. That's right.
So what We always say, how do we mitigate such a disaster? What are we going to do to mitigate that situation as a community?
Right.
So that would be, if we had participants, I don't see any participants on the line, we would be asking our community, how do we prepare, because we could have a disaster that could be more deadlier than the plague that we just had. We're going
right.
to see the signs. And New Africa Black Belt Wall Street is asking the question, what preparations are we making as a community to survive, to advance the situation that is confronting us? Because as far
yeah.
as I am concerned, as ugly as everything looks, remember, we as African Americans have always gone through the ugly periods. Saying that to say we sometimes know what to do with something that's ugly and disastrous, as one would think. Because we go through disasters, we've been going through disasters just about all our life in one form of another. So again,
right.
what do we do about this disaster that is confronting us? And if it hits, what do we do? So that's a question.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, Brother Aziz,
mm-hmm.
some folks, downfalls can be others' opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
For African Americans, for African Americans, these white folks not paying their debt put them in a default situation, because most of them are so high in debt that they'll be doing just about anything to get cash. So the cash that we have and we've been throwing into these banks so white folks can use our money to better themselves, this might be a grand time for us to start collecting our monies, not putting them in the banks, and holding on to our cash in our great big churches. Holding
yeah.
on to that
cash, yeah.
putting them in your vaults. Put security around your vaults. But hold on, because you could have some very good opportunities in buying property.
That's right.
That's talking about joint efforts, and what is the community doing as far as preparations for what look like it could be a disaster that this country has never dealt with before, and I know. But do we perish? Do
Don't
we
have
perish? Because of something that these white folks have put together and done? Because this thing of not paying your debt is because of some spoiled white folks who don't know nothing but privilege this privilege that. Everything to them is privilege, privilege, privilege. And they can't get enough of privileges. They'll never be able to satisfy their privileges. So these Democrats and Republicans, they're all white supremacists. And privileges is all they've ever known. And if you don't give me what I want, I'll make it hard for all of us. I'll tear the whole system down. It's like a bunch of spoiled brats holding on to the leadership of this country. I would say the disaster.
Yeah.
A break disaster in this country. Because you can't satisfy my desires, what I want, and they've had it like this all of their life. So if these childish white boys, white people, decide to hold each other up, and there should be a debt default. Like I said, it could be a great opportunity for African Americans. If you don't just go hold your head down and just let a disaster take you on down. But you can't do anything if you ain't. If you don't have a business plan, and that's just something in our communities we don't have too much of, and that is a business plan. And that's very unfortunate, but again, you know, I say that I'm burnt out and I'm ready to give up the reins. But I can't give up the reins. We are, my peoples are too weak when it comes to financial plannings. They are a disaster just waiting to happen. But hopefully we will continue to do our due diligence to show that, you know, if we would use our resources, because we have them. Almighty God has blessed the African Americans with more monies than any other black peoples in the world. But we just there's nothing ethical about how we use our resources. I'll put it that way. And the human beings are supposed to be doing things ethical. If you're not doing things ethical, you're doing it means you're doing it wrong. So again, I have a course, but to even though I look at this board and I don't see where we have a whole bunch of listeners on the board, but I do remember that I also know that I haven't put out the monies in advertisement, and in business, that's what you have to do. You got to keep your stuff going. So, know we took a great hit when we took our celebration of 30 days. Anytime you're away from your business for 30 days, especially something like a radio, you know, as far as everybody concerned, you off the air. We don't know what happened to them.
Yeah.
All that type of stuff. So I guess we're paying, I ain't going to say paying the price, because Ramadan come next year, I'll probably do the same thing. So I'm not going to say I'm paying them. But I just say it's time we have to go back and do it all over again. I guess that's the word to say. But in any case, we have a on with his brother Aziz. I see what she's on, and it's just good to know that the three of us are still ready to go forward. Sister Aisha, good evening. How are you?
Yes.
And we're so glad to have you back.
Yes, absolutely.
Sister Aisha. Okay, she might be on mute. I got her mic open so she can hear us.
Okay.
Sister Aisha, whenever you're ready, you can just come right in. We have your mic open. And it's always wonderful to hear from you.
Brother Bilal.
Can you hear me?
I'm well, assalamu alaikum to everyone.
Good evening. I was trying to put my earphones on so we wouldn't have any background.
Yes.
I hope you can still hear me.
Oh, yes, we hear you very well.
Oh, very good. Very good. It's good to be back, and I made a statement that COVID-19 really had me for a moment, but all praise is due to Allah. I'm back, I think, at least 99%.
And it's good to hear
you all's voices. And Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz, I want to say I truly do compliment you all for all of these years of holding this program together. And I do recognize that after 30 days being away for Ramadan, people go in different directions. But let's see if we can pull them back and form a different audience, people who are ready to move forward, to do something about the economics of our communities and the tremendous threat of climate change that we are confronted with. We have got to change our ways if we're going to be a people to survive, because climate change is no joke. And the same storm that will land on your doorstep will land on my doorstep. So we have to become serious. I was talking to a group of people the other day, and they were telling me, oh, I don't want to talk about it because it's just one more problem I have to deal with. And actually I said, well, you have no other choice. Other than if you don't deal with it and if it comes your way, you're going to be in worse shape than you are now if you survive it and if your family survive it. And so they said, eventually, after the end of the conversation, they finally said to me, well, it's not so much that we don't want to talk about it. It's just that we're afraid and we don't know what to do about it. So of course, my response was, don't be afraid. Let's talk about it, and we'll show you what to do about it. We'll talk about it, and you can put things in action to make sure that you have done everything that you can to provide for your family and to secure your property and your family's survival, especially the generational wealth that they had put together through their home. Just they had a home. They wanted to leave to their kids and grandkids. But it was not. After we talked for a while, they realized if a tornado or a hurricane comes through town, destroy this home, we would not be able to rebuild with the coverage that we have. And that was one of the things that we started talking about. What kind of coverage do you have for your home? Your homeowner's insurance does not cover damage caused by floods or earthquakes. You need a separate policy for these things, for these type of hazards.
Yeah.
And these were the things that we were able to talk about. And afterwards, they felt much better. But the reality is they came back later and told me, we can't afford another coverage, another policy to cover floods and earthquakes. We can't afford it. They are barely affording their homeowners insurance and their taxes. So that's another issue. But that is,
you know,
that is what is required.
You know, before you came on, we were just talking about, you know, like you said, the disasters but our conversation was more or less because we were talking about this budget and this budget default, and we're talking now a financial disaster that's catastrophic all over the world. But that, looking at that type of fear, like you, the lady just said, looking at that type of fear, what do we, I know as individuals we ain't going to do nothing, but what do we do as a society, as a community, realizing that this type of fear, this type of disaster is right on top of you, it's going to happen. Do we say that I am afraid and bend your head and just accept the disaster and not even consider what's going to happen if I recover? What do you do? My question is this, statement is this. These disasters that, whether it's a natural disaster or whether it's a disaster that's caused by politicians in this case, could be real big opportunities for African Americans. Because, like you said, on the natural disaster, we already know and we can see right now that insurance companies are not going to pay the damages of the disaster that these storms have already taken. Especially, Fort Myers, of Florida, that it was taken out. But anyway, insurance companies are not going to pay for the recovery of these homes. There's reports that some of the that was sent in was anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 claims that were sent in by the homeowners, and the insurance companies are paying like $23,000. Are so like that saying that this is the settlements. $23,000 on a $300,000 loss or a $500,000 loss. In situations like that, those who own these expensive properties, properties that African Americans couldn't afford, but now you're going to find many of these properties to be very affordable because of for the need of cash in the recovery. So again, my question is that we can prepare for these disasters. Because it could be an advantage for us because we've been dealing with disasters. I can't remember when a time ever been when we wasn't dealing with some kind of disaster. So
that's correct.
You know, so it could be a wonderful time for African Americans to say, rather than I'm afraid, it said we're preparing for the disaster. And for those who are able to survive, those of us who are able to survive, can now can find that prices could be in our range now where we can own valuable properties.
Well,
that we may not have been able to own before the disaster.
Right. Well,
so again,
let me say. Go ahead,
Brian. No. So again, and just said when I heard you say the sister said she was afraid. That's where you know that fear can be turned into a very optimistic rather than a fear, because I have somewhat of a plan in place.
Yes. I'm getting Sam Cooke in the background, a lot of music.
Yeah,
somebody is
needs to mute
there.
No, there we go.
Okay.
Let me
first address the first part. Who's responsible for all of this, most of this climate change? Well, and we know this because, you know, we are constantly looking at the statistical data from the research institutes and whatnot, the highly reputable ones. So we know that the wealthiest 101% of the population, the wealthiest people represent 1%. They are responsible for twice as many carbon emissions than the poorest 50%. This is in the world. So, in other words, the investment of 125 billionaires emit 393 million tons of CO2 each year. This is a million times higher than an individual in the bottom 90% of humanity, if that makes sense to you. And if that doesn't make sense, I'll clarify it. So we're saying that 125 billionaires are investing in business ventures that oil and gas, of course, and cement that emit 393 million tons of CO2 each year. And this is a million times higher than an individual in the bottom 90% of humanity, of the world. So they're the major cause of climate change, the wealthy.
But the question is, why are they allowed to pollute the entire earth? Why are they allowed to do so?
Well, this is the question.
Where's the regulation that stopped them?
The regulation is not put in place because our political system is broken, and it caters, and our economic system caters to the wealthy, because the wealthy people of this world, they are in control of those major systems of protection for society. They're in control of it.
They give the grants.
Yes. The nonprofits primarily can go to these organizations and get the grants to do little things to maintain. They determine the legal guidelines for even applying for assistance. They are owners of the insurance companies that do not give people equal pay or return on their policies, that $100,000 or whatever they get on a house that was previously valued at $300,000 that you mentioned before the storm. They are in position.
Yeah, there's no regulation. No regulations.
And
nobody
there's no
regulations. No regulations because they done paid off. They done paid off the politicians not to regulate them.
Absolutely. Now look what they're doing now. The mega landlords. Those are the landlords that leverage private equity to it, you know, in the housing market. Remember, they're the ones who are buying up houses in the gentrification group, I call them. But they are buying up houses in the gentrified communities. They are going to be the landlords of the working class people. Now, these are large corporations.
Yeah.
On my block, we have three corporation houses now. They will lease that are rent the houses to the working people at astronomical rent, and there's no regulation on rent control for them at all. And so they're going to have a whole population of people in the future who are dependent on them to pay the high rent in order for the people to have a place to live. Now, the people who are renting the houses, they are the working class professionals. They are, some of them, the middle class. They are, those houses are already outside of the reach of the poor. So we can forget that altogether. You know? From what I understand, what we're going to have to do is, are you all hearing an echo? I hear an echo in the background.
I do also. I hear it also.
Any way that I could get rid of it, are you all? Okay.
Let me see. There's nobody on but the three of us.
Okay. But, so, what I see that we have to do as a group of people, we must start becoming organized and knowledgeable of what's going on. And now that was the theme that spurred the civil rights movement, and you all know better than I. It was because we were organized, you had people becoming educated on the situation. And when they became knowledgeable, that's when the people took to the streets. But now, there. Just recently, I know you all probably heard this, the NAACP came out in opposition to DeSantis down there in Florida, putting forth a bill where the federal monies will not pay for DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. Consultant services for public institutions, and the National NAACP came out against that. Right. Well, we don't have organizations coming out against, publicly coming out against issues that are affecting us.
Right. Yeah.
And we're gonna have to come together once again.
And
be heard. But these are the things that they are going down now in our communities. This gentrification has been planned decades ago. These people who control this world, they plan decades ahead of time. And we don't know anything about it until it's in our face. Once it gets in our face, that's how now we know about it. But they've been planning this gentrification for decades. It didn't just happen.
Yeah.
You know, but
right, exactly.
Get back to what you were just saying.
Right.
And our unity. You see, what our generation did. The civil rights and bringing on the civil rights bill and having it passed and all. That's when we had an affirmative position on black was being beautiful. Being black was the prettiest thing. I mean, even white folks wanted to be black. We were so affirmative on being black is beautiful. And but you see, going back to what you just said about the NAACP in Florida, the same black congressman on the state legislature in Florida, he came out and he talked about the NAACP defending the governor, defending Trump, and like he said, about 20% of African Americans in that district now is have turned Republicans. You see, what you were saying about gentrification, African Americans, there was a time we wouldn't sell out. We wouldn't sell out our blackness. We wouldn't sell out. But our African Americans today, Hersey Walker, I mean, and there are many more of these Hersey Walkers now popping up, male and female.
Brother down in South Carolina.
And the governor, lieutenant governor in Virginia, that female, I mean, we are using the power that we presented to our communities, the black power that we are presenting, is being crumbled away, and it's been crumbled away by those that white folks are playing black folks to get in and help to crumble that black's pride away. That's what they want to get rid of. They want to get rid of us. We're the ones who are holding this black power together. And as soon as they can get our young black generation to be against each other, and like I said, we're going Republicans, and there's no sense in asking them why. We know it's a sellout. But what do we do about, you know, these black folks who are willing to sell us out? They don't have that black pride. They don't have that black is beautiful. They don't love each other. They don't socialize with each other. Matter of fact, many of them stay away from each other. Black folks have got to the point where they don't like each other. And this is what the white man wants to continue to crumble into. And, I'm sorry, go right ahead, Sister Aisha.
We have, you know, what you're saying is true, but the reality is we've always had them around, these black folks who are quick to sell out. We've had them, and we'll probably always have them, but we called them out. We were strong enough. We didn't start calling them out initially. We had to get stronger through our local community organizations calling them out. And once we got strong on the local level, then the national organizations had no other choice but to come on board.
Yeah,
because we were calling
them
out as well. So I believe that energy is still there, but we have to show our younger people where it is. And our young people, once they start hurting because they are not fulfilling their aspirations of success, they'll start seeing it. And that hurt was what we had to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents participated with us in the civil rights movement, and they participated because they were hurting from and had the scars of segregation. We participated because we saw them as well as we were hurting because we were not able to fulfill our aspirations. And
yeah.
These have been the momentum of the sticking point that we have got to start talking about with this generation. And I do believe that there are people out there, there are organizations, there are faith-based groups who, once again, are willing to take the lead and bring the community together. Because most of the African Americans are still connected to the faith-based groups. And these are the ones that we have to work with. And I tell you, Frankel, I look forward to doing it. And in another couple of days or so, I'll let you know, because I will start talking to the faith-based groups with the climate change initiative. You know, you always have to have a point for discussion. And for me, the point for discussion is climate change. And then we can bring in what these groups must do in order to, for their constituent base to survive, because without their constituent base, they won't have the revenue to survive.
Right.
So
yeah, that's
what I think.
Oh, no, well, that's what you should be working on. Myself and Brother Aziz, when it comes to the business and the political side of it, you'll hear more from us on that side, and that's what we'll also be promoting, because we still are Black Belt Wall Street.
Absolutely.
And Black Belt Wall Street, we're all about bringing back what they did and making it even better. So that's a real job. But if we can
Brother Bilal, you said, when I came on, you said you were not going to give up. You and Brother Aziz are not going to give up. I know you are getting tired.
Right.
But you made that statement. When I talked to you the other day, it sounded like you were considering calling it, turning everything off. But you made a statement that you're not going to give up, and that is the beginning of a new life.
Yeah.
You're not going to give up. You're going to stay in there.
Yeah,
because the value, the African American's value is just too valuable to not continue to be informative about. They got a serious value, but they just they give their values to give their values to their slave masters, those who put them in the position that they're in. That's who they give their values to. They do all their bank. I mean, right? Like I said, here you got a bunch of folks talking about we're threatening, and the Democrats is threatening, and the Republicans are threatening, and the whole thing is about greed.
Greedy white man.
Yeah.
Aziz, trying to make a comment on, and we think that you have a comment you want to make. I think we're going to make the night short.
No, all I was going to say is we were talking nothing except just we just said, you know, greed, you know, just a bunch of greedy politicians with no concern about their constituents. And I'm agreeing with Sister Aisha, you know, to wake up this community on, you know, on the disaster preparation, because on the business side, you know, it's not out of our people's means, ways and means in that, but this disaster preparation is something that they can't cry, I'm too broke, or I don't have the means to prepare for this, because this is something that's within all of our means. So
that's a good attraction.
That's going to be a good attraction for our audience.
And we're working on a model where the organizations like the churches will pay for the training for so many of their parishioners, and they will put, they will pay for it, and that's how we will be able to offer it and pay our back end people and our expenses. But, and then, of course, those will be the people who will be mobilized to get something done. And once they see that they can be in front of the storm, of the disaster, and know what they're going to do when it does come, they will be more empowered to deal with some of these political, social, and economic issues, I do believe. But people are tired and they are scared.
Yeah. Well,
and we have a tendency to, when we are afraid, we just don't want to talk about it. We just want it to go away.
Yeah.
But
right.
It's not going away.
No.
That's right.
No. No. All right, brothers and sisters, like we said, we are going to have to get our interests out there, let folks know who we are, and bring them back.
Yeah.
Especially,
absolutely.
Especially the business folks. They always need to. They always need to network with each other. So
now, one of the things that we can do is, you know, the regional. Imams meeting is coming up, and it was held this past weekend, but the larger one is in September, and then the national one is in October. And we're talking about, I don't know what the numbers are as far as constituent base for the Muslim community, the community under Imam W.D. Muhammad. But it has to be, what, at least 30,000, 20,000 people?
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
What do you
think?
At least. When we, and the national Imam conference, we are going to be offered an invitation to address that group. Well, at least that's what I was told the other day. And I believe it's going to take place. If not, I'll keep on them. But look at that. That's 20,000 or 30,000 people. Now, we might not have the ear of all of them, but we're going to have their number. We're going to have, this grouping represents that many people. And we're going to start putting it out there. And we're going to let them know, this is your voice on Black Belt Wall Street.
Society, if they will allow the three of us to speak, we will take.
All right.
All we need is to be given the presence to speak, because we already know with what we have to say, because what we have to say is basically what Imam W.D. Muhammad had to say when he started the Business Association. We haven't did nothing but fulfill his ideas, and we have all of his ideas now that we're ready to present.
Okay. Now, realizing that the regional one is going to be virtual. They've told me that, which is fine. And the national is going to be 2 days. One is going to be virtual, and the next day is going to be in person. And they don't know where the in-person one is going to be. But I just wanted to let you know. And absolutely, we are coming as a team. It's not just Aisha. We are a team.
Yeah.
And this is how I am presenting it to them.
We're coming there as a team. I'm telling you that allow us a few, whatever time they allow us, we'll be able to come back that time with information.
Yes, right. And that's the, and so I just want to let you know I'm going to be hold them to it. I was made this promise because I could not go up to Greensboro to the conference, and because I was scheduled to address the Mid-Atlantic Imams group. I could not. Dr. Neera Dean suggested it would be too much for me, and I need to rest.
Right.
So I follow his advice, and he is the convener for the Mid-Atlantic region, and he said, I have the spot. And he is going to assure us that we have the spot for the national as well.
Excellent.
So,
excellent. Fantastic.
So my dear brothers, we have got to get on back out there and do what we know that we have done in the past that worked.
That's right. That is absolutely right.
Feel
good. I'm glad to know you're back.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
good to be back. You know.
Yeah.
So I will, I'm going to keep you all informed as they make their plans, because we want to be there and we want to have enough time to talk.
Yeah.
And to bring them on board. And now we're going to have to get together and have our plan together. All right? So we'll be meeting.
We don't know what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, but we got to have a plan of action. Step-by-step plan of action. And the three of us, we're going to have to get together off the radio, of course. And if each one of us will have some concept of a plan of action, I'm going to jot down some ideas and an approach, and so we can present one plan. Because the first thing they're going to ask us, of which Dr. Neera Dean has already asked, what do you want us to do? You know, that is what they want to know. What do you, because the reality is they need, we're in, what we're talking here, nobody, I don't know anybody talking like this. You do you all?
No.
No.
I know exactly they're not talking, because first of all, I don't think they know enough about business to talk. You know?
And they certainly, if they don't know anything about business, you know they don't know anything about climate change.
So,
and
you know, there's no way, there's no way they could hold a continuing conversation on the way we've been holding a continuing conversation every week. And we're talking about nothing but business and politics and now climate change.
Yep.
Every week we got an informative conversation. I mean, because, again, you should have an informative conversation because business is an everyday going thing. Every day something is something. Brand new in business. But the only way you're going to know is to be out there and be active. No.
I just want to let you all, I will definitely, inshallah, I will be following up with them and making sure that they are ready for us. And Dr. Neera Dean is my point of contact locally, and brother, what's that brother's name? Shakir, the international. I was up there in Greensboro. Remember a few years ago when the big conference was up there in Greensboro, and the national imams had their retreat.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I was there then. And I along with Fitra and her niece and Beatrice Muhammad, we sat in on their meetings. We were their guests. But however, they didn't want us to say anything, but they invited us to sit in, which we did. And I tell you, I learned a lot. Yeah. And so we'll be back with them, hopefully, inshallah. Okay, well,
inshallah.
I want you to know I'll go to work.
All right. Well, we all going to do.
Thank you all.
All right, sister.
And thank you all. I was so excited a few minutes ago when I heard you say, well, we are not going to quit.
Yeah.
All right.
No,
okay.
I ain't going nowhere.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
We just have to learn how to promote and market our program. That's all.
Yeah. Now we got to put it back together again, honestly.
All right, sister. Yes, we will.
Great.
Well,
Laikin Asalaam. You all take care.
Come on.
Alhamdulillah.